The other thing is I see a lot of people who get bored and they'll jump to something because they're like, this is hard, and they'll jump to something else. That's fine. If you don't like something, you shouldn't force yourself to do something you don't like. But if you're constantly jumping to something else because it gets hard, you'll never get better.
Do you know enough to land that very first job in the cybersecurity field? You likely have some of the basic knowledge and skills, but let's dive deeper. Are these skills just about technical know-how? Or is there more to being cyber-prepared? How does one stay ahead in a world where digital threats are evolving faster than ever before? Today, we're not just exploring what these foundational skills are, but also why they are first line of defense in the digital arena. Get ready to question, learn, and fortify your cybersecurity knowledge today. Today's guest is the CEO and co-founder of Accolade, a company specializing in cybersecurity training and certifications. They offer certifications like the Accolade Cybersecurity Resilience Fundamental, the ACCRF, and the Accolade Cybersecurity Resilience Practitioner, the ACCRP. These certifications focus on the understanding and implementation of the NIST framework. And don't worry if you don't know what the NIST framework is yet, because we're going to dive into that and so much more. So without further ado, please welcome Jason Dion to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dakota. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to actually dive right into, in the intro, I mentioned the NIST framework. People want to get into cybersecurity and may have heard what NIST is, but probably don't know exactly what it is. Do you mind, kind of diving into what the NIST cybersecurity framework actually is?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess probably the best place to start is what is NIST, and then we can talk about the NIST cybersecurity framework. So NIST is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and they've been around since the early 1900s, and they actually started out by the U.S. government. It's a U.S. government organization, and their mandate was to make sure everybody was using basically the same methods and standards in commerce and in science and in technology. And for example, when you go to the gas pump and you get a gallon of gas, you want to make sure you're actually getting a gallon and not 1.1 gallons or 0.75 gallons. So there's measurements and standards that we use. And a lot of that comes from NIST from their early days. Now, over the last 120 some odd years, they've evolved their mission and they've gone into other areas too. And one of those has been this IT world and cybersecurity. And one of the things they're most well known for these days is the NIST cybersecurity framework, which is also called the NIST CSF. Now, what the NIST cybersecurity framework is used for is it gives all of us a way of doing cybersecurity and understanding the risk in our organizations and then taking mitigating steps to be able to get that risk down to what is considered an acceptable level for our organization. Now, if that sounds really wishy-washy, it is, right? And that's one of the problems with the NIST cybersecurity framework for a lot of people, because it is not a compliance framework. It is different than using something like the ISO 27001 or 27002 standards, because those say, thou shalt do all these things, and it becomes a checklist. Or if you use COBIT, which is the controls inside of IT systems, a lot of organizations will use COBIT, it is very directive. If you take credit cards, you have to follow PCI DSS requirements, which are the payment card industry digital security standards. And it says you will do all of these things. And all of these things out there are standards and they're requirements and either contractual or legal regulations. NIST is not that. NIST is a voluntary framework. It is something you can adopt. It started here in the United States. It was started for the U.S. government and specifically for the critical infrastructure of the United States, which is the 16 critical infrastructures of the things like healthcare and gasoline and energy systems and nuclear power and transportation like airline systems and flight control systems. And they realized these are dangerous areas. So in 2015, NIST gathered people from all over the U.S., all of these academic and professional folks, got them together, and it was about 200-400 people that went through, and they built this thing of how can we do cybersecurity so that we can reduce the risk? Because at the end of the day, we never have enough time or money to do everything we need in cyber, and so we have to get it down to what is reasonable for our organization. And I'm sure we can talk more about that later on, but that's kind of the big picture of what NIST is and why the CSF, or the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, is so important.
Absolutely, and I kind of want to go a little bit further and ask, why do you feel it's so important that people just getting into cybersecurity have a good understanding of what the actual NIST cybersecurity framework is?
Yeah, so the NIST cybersecurity framework, like I said, started out in the critical infrastructure sector. And that's what they were building it for, because the U.S. government was seeing, oh no, if somebody goes and takes out our air traffic control systems, that's going to be a problem. If somebody takes out our power grid, that's going to be a problem for us as a country, right? If somebody goes in to attach our banking systems, that's going to be a problem. But the big issue is the U.S. government can't solve that problem. It's not their systems. They don't own Bank of America. They don't own Chase or Wells Fargo. They don't own the air traffic control systems. It's actually owned by a bunch of private industries that are cobbled together. Or if you look at power plants, I'm in Florida. We have Florida Power and Light. Where you are, you probably have a different power company. And we all work together and we all share resources to create power across the U.S., but it's not owned by the U.S. government. And so they said, what if, you know, Duke Energy here in Orlando gets attacked? Can FPL help them out, which is Florida Power and Light? They're competing companies, but they now need to work together. And so in this cybersecurity framework got all these critical infrastructures together to help them do that. When they started doing that, other companies go, that looks like some cool stuff. Maybe we should get in on that too. And so then you start seeing other things like grocery stores using it. I know a sports team that uses the NIST cybersecurity framework for their IT organization. And they're definitely not critical infrastructure, but it's something they use because they've realized it works well. And so with version one of the NIST cybersecurity framework, it was really designed, if you look at the title, it actually said for critical infrastructure. By version 1.1 and now version 2, it's expanded out into all industries. And the other thing is, you might have heard me say over and over, US, 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 but it's not only in the US. I have a course on Udemy that is about the introduction to the NIST cybersecurity framework. And in that course, I actually go through 6 different case studies. And some of the case studies I bring up are actually, there was a local government in Australia that uses it, and they've been using it very effectively. Saudi Aramco, the huge oil conglomerate, they use it, and they've been using it very effectively. But then Intel, which is a chip processor, they use it. There's a manufacturing company called Crimco, they use it. And I bring all these examples out to show how these organizations have used it. And we talk about 5 minutes on each of those organizations and how they implemented it and what benefits they've been seeing by using this framework and how it's been able to be useful in their specific business and industry. Because that's really the big thing with the NIST cybersecurity framework is it works across all industries. It works across all companies, whether you're remote first, whether you're cloud first, whether you're on-premise, whether you're in the U.S., whether you're across the U.S. or across the globe, you can use the NIST cybersecurity framework and use it effectively. And that's why it's such an important tool for us as cybersecurity folks.
And, you know, I want to take a few steps back and ask you a question I get asked all the time. What are some of the most essential cybersecurity skills everyone should know when trying to get into the field?
The number one thing is you need to have good soft skills, right? The idea of being that, you know, coder in the basement in the black hoodie that doesn't talk to anybody, that doesn't exist. There are jobs like that, but I will tell you, you will not go very far in the cybersecurity industry. I have gone pretty far in my career in cybersecurity. I've been doing this since 1994 is when I first got started with computers and networking and technology professionally. So I'm kind of old. I'm only 43, but I've been doing this since I was 14, right? That was when I got my first job. And I've been doing this for a long time. I've worked for very small companies. I've worked for very large companies. And the number one skill that has gotten me through is soft skills. The ability to take complex topics and dumb them down and teach them at a, you know, 8th grade or 10th grade level, that has been my number one selling feature across the industry as I move from position to position. And it's made me very, very popular with the senior decision makers. Because at the end of the day, if you want to be a cybersecurity consultant, which makes really good money, your number one job is doing all that technical stuff. But the people who are paying you are CEOs, CFOs, and COOs. And they're not IT people. They're not cyber people. They may not even understand any of that language. So you now need to talk in analogies and break it down for them. For example, one of the last people I worked with fairly closely when I worked for a large organization, the U.S. government I was working for, was a 4-star admiral who was a ship driver. He drove ships around for 30 years, and now he was in charge of cyber defense for the Navy at the time. And as I was working with him, I always made sure that I brought things down to a level that I would relate it, like, hey, I know that you drive ships and this is how that looks there, or you do, you know, military planning under this way. Well, in the cyber world, here's how that looks. And I would basically do the translation. Otherwise, I'm speaking French and he's speaking English and we're not talking together. So if I have to translate to French so he can speak French, that works in that analogy. So I found that to be really the number one skill. Now, in addition to that, obviously you need technical skills. You need to understand networking. You need to understand the basics of security. You need to understand frameworks and legal requirements, especially if you're going to be working on the consulting or the pen testing or the vulnerability analysis side. All of that is all built around these different frameworks. And that's one of the reasons why I love the NIST cybersecurity framework, because it doesn't compete with all these other frameworks like PCI DSS, HIPAA, GOBA, Sarbanes-Oxley. Instead, all of those get integrated in and can be used together with the NIST Cybersecurity as that overarching framework, where you're thinking about your controls, you're thinking about your risk, and how you can mitigate that risk down to the acceptable level for your specific industry to create value for the business. Because when I'm talking with leaders, I'm talking about what is the cost and what is the return on investment. And I can tell them all day long, I need $1 billion for cybersecurity to fix the problems. And there was one organization I was working with where literally we had a $1 billion bill that we presented to them of what we needed to be able to fix all their problems. Now, this is a large organization with a couple of million people across six continents, right? Really, really big. And we got the $1 billion, but it was over a five-year period to make all those changes. That being said, we really could have used $2 billion or $3 billion because of the amount of scale we had. But we had to bring it down to something that was reasonable for them. $1 billion doesn't sound reasonable, I know, but it is for them because they have a multi-billion dollar, you know, I think their budget is $300-$500 billion a year. But for that organization, that was reasonable for what they needed. But, you know, if I was doing that for, you know, a company like Whole Foods Market, right, they've got, you know, several hundred grocery stores, they're not going to spend $1 billion on cybersecurity. I might be lucky to get them to spend $5 or $10 million a year, million with an M, not billion with a B, right? Because, right, you know, they've got a large presence and a large infrastructure. But again, their business isn't cyber. Their business is selling groceries. And so being able to understand what their goal is and then working around what do we need to do to secure that. And I think the biggest thing that a lot of people going into cyber miss is that they think everything has to be 100% secure. And it doesn't. You have to choose your battles. You need to figure out where you can take the risk and where you can't, and then you can shift your resources there. And that's what CEOs, CFOs, and COOs are always looking at is, where do I take the risk, where do I get the ROI, and what gives me the best bang for my buck?
Absolutely. Now, if I'm going to go for my first job in the cybersecurity field, do you think these skills alone, you know, soft skills and some of these technical skills, are enough to land that first job? Or is there some things I can do to make myself more appealing to employers? You know, personally, I would imagine certifications would be one of those things, but I definitely would love to hear your opinion.
Most employers are going to look for three things when they're looking to hire you, right? The first one is going to be experience, right? If you have experience, that trumps everything else in the eyes of an employer, with the caveat of it trumps everything else when a live human is interviewing you and actually looks at your resume. The problem is, most of the time, no live human is going to look at your resume until it makes it through the dreaded ATP, the applicant tracking system, right? This is a system when I put in a resume, it goes through the algorithm and AI and ML reads it and goes, Jason looks like a reasonable candidate. He's at least a 50% match. Now I'll put it on Dakota's desk for him to look at that resume and decide if he wants to interview Jason, right? And the problem is, if you don't have certifications, you're not going to make it in front of that hiring manager. In this case, I was saying Dakota is the hiring manager, but that's what we're talking about, right? Because the ATS is saying the hiring manager wrote down that they want somebody with 2 years of experience. They want somebody who has experience with Linux and Windows and this and that. And they have the whole laundry list of stuff. They must have, you know, a bachelor's or an associate's degree or whatever those things are on that job requirement and these certifications. And so if they say you need Security Plus and you don't have Security Plus, you're not going to make it into the hiring manager's for consideration pile. You may be the best candidate. I know guys who have 20 years of experience and zero certifications. And you could do that 20 years ago. It wasn't a problem. But these days, without those certifications, so much of the hiring is being done by the machines. You have to be able to have those just to hit that check mark. And I know it's annoying. I know a lot of people out there listening to me going, Jason, why do I have to get the certification? I already have the knowledge. And it's like, yes, I know, but if employers are asking for that cert, you need that cert because that system is going to check for it unless you know a way around the system. Because if I know Dakota through LinkedIn or maybe he goes to my church or my softball league, I'd be like, hey, I heard you're hiring. By the way, I'm really good. Here's my resume. Now it's directly in his hands. Now he's going to look at it. But otherwise, if I'm applying for Google, I don't know anybody at Google. I'm going to have to go in through the front door through ATS. I got to have those things to hit it. And so the best advice I always give people is, think about the position you want. Once you know the position you want by title, start looking on LinkedIn, Monster, and Dice, and look in your area and say, what are employers asking for this position? If they're asking for Security Plus, get your Security Plus. If they're asking for CEH or Pentest Plus, they're both kind of equivalent certifications, but some employers ask for one and some ask for the other. If your dream employer is asking for CEH, you better get CEH, even though I will tell you, Pentest Plus is a harder cert, it is a better cert, and I actually know the person can do some pen testing if they have that versus CEH. But A lot of people still ask for CEH, so I still have CEH on my resume.
Absolutely. No, and I agree 100% with that. You know, especially nowadays in the day of automation and AI, you know, I know organizations that, you know, feed every single resume, not only through the ATS, but through like an AI system such as ChatGPT. And if, you know, those AI systems do not see those keywords, you're not going to even, your resume or application is not going to even see a human. A human is not going to even read it. So that's definitely, I feel, where certifications come into play.
And the other warning I'll give you here is that it used to be, it was only large companies that were using these AI and ML based systems, right? These days, everybody's using them, right? I just sold my old company, Dion Training, and we are a small company. We currently have about 25 to 30 employees. But when we put up a job posting, we get anywhere from 100 to 1,000 resumes submitted. And we're a really small company, right? And so we have to use one of these systems. And we use an AI system. And if somebody's applying for a job, it takes their resume, compares it to the job description. We also ask them interview questions in there. They get 10 interview questions, 60 seconds each. And it's actually judging them based on their appearance. It's judging them based on how they talk, how confident they are. Are they maintaining eye contact? All these things. And that way, it then says, out of the 1,000 people applied, here's the 30 we think you probably should look at. And then we have a real human look at those 30. She then decides which of those 5 are getting interviews. And out of those 5 that got interviews that pass her interview, then 3 go to the second round interview with the executives who make the hiring decision. But we have to do that because if I'm the executive making the hiring decision and I spend a minute on every resume and there's 1,000 resumes, that's like a month of effort with me doing nothing else. I just don't have the time. So I have to use these systems to get it to a reasonable number. And that's why things like ZipRecruiter are using AI systems. We have a specialized AI system that we're using called Interviewer. And there's many of them out there. But even small companies with a handful of employees are still using these systems. So it's critically important to understand you're writing for a computer. And then you're proving yourself in the interview. And that's when you're actually getting a shot.
So today we're actually going to be giving away a few cybersecurity training bundles from Accolade for their new Accolade Certified Cyber Resilience Fundamental course, the ACCRF. And I'll tell you guys a little bit more on how to enter that in a bit, but I want to talk about the certification. You know, who is this certification for? What are some of the skills you're going to actually be learning in it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we talked out at the beginning of the episode about the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, and that is what we cover in the NIST, in the CCRF, which is the Accolade Certified Cyber Resilience Fundamentals. This is actually a certification. It's a new certification that came out in 2023, and the follow-up is coming out in 2024. It's in beta right now, and it is actually the practitioner level. So all the Accolade certifications are done as two different levels. There's a fundamental level, and then there's a practitioner level. The fundamental level is for somebody who is just learning out. It's knowledge-based exams. So we're talking about Bloom's Level 1 and 2, which means it's definitions, it's recall, it's given a scenario, pick something out. And those are usually, you know, 1 to 3 sentence questions, very short, very similar to like a Security Plus type of depth. Now, this particular exam is covering the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. And when you get certified as a CCRF, you're showing employers you understand the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. You understand the different portions of it and how it works, and you can be part of a cybersecurity team. Now, this means you're going to be part of the team, but you're not leading the team. You're not ready to be a consultant. We're not going to cut you loose on your own and say, hey, go over there to Facebook and go do an assessment for them, right? You're not ready for that yet. But you can be a part of a team that's doing that with 5 or 10 other people, and that's really what we're talking about. So it's a really good entry-level way to get in. If you've gotten something like a Security Plus, this is a great follow-up to that, because in Security Plus, we talk about the NIST Cybersecurity Framework for about, 10 minutes, right? It's like one sub-objective of one bullet, right? And there's like one bullet that talks about all the frameworks, and the NIST Cybersecurity Framework is one of those. And the problem is, employers are saying, I need people who know NIST, but there's no certifications for NIST out there. So when we created Accolade, and I am a co-founder of Accolade, I'm gonna be honest and upfront there, when we created it, one of the things we were doing was we talked with hiring managers and said, what are you missing? What can we do to help you? And as we built out our certifications, we have a network of hiring managers. We had about 50 to 100 people working with us that told us, if I'm going to hire somebody to do this type of a role, here's the things I need. And they created a job task analysis, which told us there was about 50 to 100 different things they said. They must be able to explain what is cybersecurity. They need to explain what are the framework tiers. They need to explain what is a framework profile. They need to explain what is PCI DSS and how does it work with NIST and all those different things. We took all that, put it into the certification, And then we went through and we hired experts from across the industry, from really big companies, to come in and help us write all the questions. And then it went through all the statistical analysis. We went through all the process and all the rigmarole that it takes to become an official worldwide industry certification. We've gone through the beta. We got all that done, and it went live in October. So that exam has been out now, as we're filming this, about 2 months. We've got about 100, 150 people certified in it. And we're giving your audience, I believe, five copies of the textbook and the exam vouchers for them to be able to go and get certified themselves if they want to. And you're going to talk about how they can enter that drawing for that as part of the holiday giveaway. And when you do that, you will be certified as a CCRF, a Cyber Resilience Fundamentals person, and you'll be able to be a part of one of these teams running these type of cyber consultations and cyber assessments. The second level, which is coming out in early 24, we're going to be going into beta in January and February, is the practitioner level, and that's certifying you to lead the team and be the cybersecurity consultant. And that's what we're really doing here. And again, we've worked with all these hiring managers because we know that if it's not on that job description and hiring managers don't want it, there's no reason for you to get it, right? And that's the thing, is we're not creating this just to make money. We made these to be very inexpensive. We don't want cost to be a factor keeping people out, because one of the problems, and I've been in the cybersecurity industry for a while, especially the certification side, I am getting really frustrated with all these companies that are raising the prices over and over and over again. There's one certification I've been teaching since 2017. In 2017, it was $165 to take it. Today, it is $680. It's been 5 years. It's gone up four times in cost. That's ridiculous to me. So our certifications at retail are $125 for the foundation, $200 for the practitioner. We try to keep it very low and affordable, but we do have to pay all these experts to come in and help us write these things. And so that's what we've been doing. And so we built this company from the ground up to serve the needs of two people: the hiring managers who need to hire people, and the people who want to get a job. That's who we're focused on. And really, we're focused on the hiring managers, because we know if we get the hiring managers' problem solved, you as test takers are going to do it because you want to get those jobs the hiring manager wants.
Like we mentioned earlier, we're going to be giving away several of these training bundles, which is comprised of the official textbook that you actually helped wrote, if I understand correct, Mastering Cybersecurity Resilience, and then also an exam voucher to take the official exam.
That is correct. Yeah, I am one of the co-authors on that book. There's three of us that got together and we wrote it. The three co-authors, between the three of us, we have about 70 years in doing cyber resilience. My co-author, Kip Boyle, he's been professionally a cybersecurity consultant for about 20 years now for numerous large companies, financial companies, insurance companies, etc. I spent the last 20 years working in and around the government side. So we have both the commercial sector and critical industry side, as well as the government and critical industry side. And then our third co-author came from military intelligence background and working a lot with critical infrastructure as well, which is where the NIST cybersecurity framework came from. So it's not just, you know, Jason's good ideas. This is a collection of the three of us, the best practices we've learned over doing this for 20 to 25 years before NIST cybersecurity framework came out and after the NIST cybersecurity framework came out, and how we implement it.
That's so cool.
The other thing you'll learn in that textbook and in the practitioner course is the NIST cybersecurity framework. One of the biggest complaints people have about it when they try to use it is it is very squishy. It's very generic because it's made as a framework. And if you're not familiar with frameworks, they're made to be this big picture idea. In fact, if you go download the NIST cybersecurity framework version 1.1, the entire document is only 55 pages. And if you take out all the glossary of terms and the index and stuff, it's really about 35 pages of information. Now, our textbook is 200, 250 pages. Why? Because we actually go into detail about not just what it is, but how do you actually apply this in the real world? And we give you case studies, and we have a process that methodically walks you through step by step, because the NIST cybersecurity framework does a great job of saying, here's what you need to do, but it doesn't tell you how to do it. And that becomes a struggling block, especially for people breaking into the industry, because they don't have the 20 years of experience to be able to implement it. So that's what we've done in the certification, is teach you, how do we get you through this as a step-by-step process? Almost like baking a cake. We gave you the recipe here. Instead of just saying, chocolate cake is good, take some flour, take some sugar, and take some eggs, put it in a pan, and you'll have a chocolate cake. I can tell that to a cook or a baker, and they can do that. If I tell that to myself, I don't know how to make a cake. I need to know, do I grease the pan with butter or lard? Do I put it in the oven for 20 minutes or 50 minutes, right? I don't know. I need the recipe. And that's what we did here.
That's actually super, super cool and super exciting. Now, if you guys are interested in entering this giveaway, there's actually a link down in the description, and you'll need the keyword accolade to enter the drawing. So, Jason, while I got you here, I want to actually get some of the fun questions that I really enjoy asking every guest I have on here. So let's kind of turn up the heat. If you had to start your career all over again, what is the one thing you would do differently in your career?
That's a really hard question, actually, because I've done a lot of things in my career. I would say probably the biggest thing is I would say yes more often and not be afraid of failure, right? I think a lot of people are afraid of failing. So sometimes we stick in our comfort zone, right? So if you're a IT technician working the help desk, you may look up and you've been there for 5 years and you could do it in your sleep. It's so easy at this point, right? But you're really not growing. You're not advancing. And so step out and take a risk, right? I will tell you early on in my career, I started as a IT consultant before cybersecurity was really a big thing. And I was doing network design and I was doing web development. And somebody said, hey, I need a database built. Can you do that? And I was like, sure. And then like, how long will it take? I'm like, a month. And they're like, great, no problem. You've got the job. And then I went and got myself a textbook and taught myself how to do databases because I never did a database before. but it was a paid opportunity for me to learn and get it done. And I ran into some problems along the way. And I actually got about 3/4 of the way through and I was like, couldn't get over a hurdle. So I actually hired an outside consultant to help me for an hour or two to get over that hurdle so I could finish the job. But then I was good and I could do it from then on. And it added another feather in my cap that I could put on my resume. And it was another service I could offer my customers. So, you don't want to lie and say you can do something when you can't necessarily, but I knew it was something I could figure out. And I had enough background that I could get there, right? So I would just say, don't be afraid of taking some risks, but take calculated risks. Because I knew if I couldn't figure it out, I could hire somebody to come in. And worst case, I paid somebody else and I lost money on the job, but at least I would learn something along the way. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. The other thing I think is have a roadmap and have a plan. And this is something I didn't know at first. So I was kind of stumbling in the dark. 20 years ago when I started, I was doing network design. I was doing web programming. I was doing databases now. I had somebody say, can you do a pen test? I'm like, sure. I went and figured out how to do pen testing, right? Because this was the Wild West in the late 90s, yeah. Early 2000s. No one really was doing this professionally. And one of the pieces of advice I got about 10 years into my career was don't think about the current job. Don't think about the next job. Think about the job after that. So really, we're talking about having a 5 or 10 year plan. And so if you're starting out today and you're like, my goal is to be a pen tester. Well, you're not going to be a pen tester today. It's going to be really hard to go from zero to pen testing. There's just so much stuff you need to learn, right? But you can say, okay, what do I need to learn between now and 5 years from now so I can get that job as a junior pen tester? Well, I probably need to work on the help desk for a year. I need to work as a system administrator or a network administrator for a year. Then I can go into the security side for 3 or 4 years and do vulnerability management and assessments. Because if you know how the network is supposed to work, now, when you go to be a pen tester, you can break in and make it do what you want, right? And I think a lot of people try jumping to the end immediately. I can't jump into the water today and swim a mile, but I could probably swim 3 laps. And tomorrow I can swim 5, and the next day I can swim 7, and I can keep growing incrementally. And I think if you have a plan, you're growing towards something instead of just bouncing around. The other thing is I see a lot of people who get bored, and they'll jump to something because they're like, this is hard, and they'll jump to something else. That's fine. If you don't like something, you shouldn't force yourself to do something you don't like. But if you're constantly jumping to something else because it gets hard, you'll never get better. So sometimes you do have to stick it out. And again, if you know their plan is in 5 years, I want to be a pen tester, then I'm going to stick with those things that are hard to get to that. And if there's something that's not really on that critical path, I could say, you know what? I don't really need to know how to program in Java. Python's good enough, and I'll get rid of Java and just do Python because more pen testers use Python than Java, right? And things like that. I think if you have a vision of where you want to go, that'll keep you on the right track.
Such great advice. Now, I want to close out today's episode with a story from you, actually, about what I think is one of the most scary things people in the IT field really deal with. Can you tell me about a time where everything went disastrously wrong, and what did you take away from that scenario?
Yeah, so I've had numerous times when things have gone disastrously wrong, many, many, many times. And sometimes it's our fault, sometimes it's not our fault, and we just get stuck with picking up the pieces. I would say probably one of the biggest ones was I got a call. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. I was packing up my desk, getting ready to go home for the weekend. And my boss comes in at 3:30 and is just about to pick up my lunch bag and go home. He goes, hey, I need you to book travel. And I'm like, why do you need me to book travel? I'm off for the next 2 weeks. He goes, actually, I need you over in this country tomorrow because we had a cyber breach and I need you to go fix it right now. So my vacation got canceled. The vacation was actually my 10-year wedding anniversary. My wife was very unhappy about that. But me and two other guys had to jump on a plane and fly across the world and go take care of that data breach. And it was ugly and it was nasty. And I think the most difficult thing when you're dealing with cleaning up a data breach or recovery like that, especially when you're coming in as an outside consultant, which is essentially what we were. It was still internal to our organization, but our organization was millions of end users across six continents. And so, you know, flying across the world, we own that network, but it wasn't my network. I didn't know it on a daily basis. Yeah. So now I get there and the first thing we have to do is go, I say, where's your network diagrams? They go, we don't have any. Great. So now we had to spend, you know, hours running Nmap scans and trying to figure out what does your network look like all the while the bad guy's in the network and we don't know where he is, right? Right. And so now we had to figure out, and then we went through and we cleaned it all up and got it all taken care of. And that took us about a week. And then after they go, okay, is everything gone? We're like, honestly, we'll never know. You can never prove that they're not there. You can only prove right. they are there, right? And we thought we got them out. And luckily, we, as far as we know, 10 years later, we got them out and they haven't come back. But it's one of those things you just never know. And right. you know, the bosses, the CEOs, they want to know, hey, we're good, right? Everything's clean. And I'm like, you know, we've done everything we can. We've checked everything. I'm like, the only way I can guarantee you're fully clean is if I take away everything in your network and buy you all new equipment and start from scratch. Because rootkits exist. Things that go into the firmware exist. And you can never know that the bad guy is still in there in that case. So you do your best and it's frustrating and it can throw a wrench in your schedule. And that was probably one of the biggest, you know, disasters I had. I can't tell you the company, obviously, because of NDAs and all that kind of good stuff. I can't tell you where it was. But I've had many of those in my career. And it's, I actually enjoy those because it's fun. It's exciting. But it is one of those things that, you know, if you're going to be a cyber consultant or a cleanup recovery expert, if you're doing a lot of incident response and data forensics, you'll get those calls, you know, 3 a.m. We need you on a plane by 5 a.m. Grab your bag and go. It got to the point where my wife made fun of me because I literally had a bag, you know, one of those carry-on suitcases that had like three sets of underwear, three socks, three shirts, three jeans. Like it was my go bag and it was always packed and ready to go so that if I got a call, I could be at the airport within an hour.
It's so funny. So in my very first job in the IT field, I worked for a hotel company and we were a West Coast based hotel company. So it wasn't worldwide, but it was along the West Coast. But we had a team of three to manage all these hotels along the West Coast. And I very much had the same thing. I didn't work in cybersecurity, but at the drop of a hat, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't unheard of for my CEO to walk by my office and said, hey, meet me out at the airport in 15 minutes. We're taking the jet and flying down to California. I'd be like, great. What are we doing? You know, how many pairs of underwear do I need to pack for this? So it's not just, you know, to cybersecurity. That actually is not uncommon in the tech field. Again, it varies depending job role and organization. But yeah, that those situations can be extremely stressful. But the way I always tried to, after like the dust has settled, you know, I always tried to recap and debrief and like, okay, what did I learn from this? How can I react better in the next situation? So I think these stories, while
that's always an important part of your incident response, right, is conducting your hot watch at the end and your lessons learned to make sure what caused that incident? How do we stop that from happening? And for us, it happened in one location, but we had locations all over the world, right? So we said, okay, now that we figured that out, we put out a message to everybody and said, go check your networks for this thing. Make sure this isn't happening. Make sure the way they got in, because you were missing patch 1, 2, 3, everybody else has that patch now, right? And you learn from those things. And additionally, myself, that's why I started carrying that go bag, because I learned like sometimes I wouldn't have time to actually go and pack everything I needed. So this way I always knew it was ready. I had another incident similar to you where I got a call and was like, hey, you need me on a plane tonight. I went and they said, oh, you're going to be gone for 2 days. It's really defined cleanup. This. Great. No problem. I get out there. By the time I landed 20 hours later, because it was around the world flight, they go, they figured out, oh, it was actually worse than we thought. And it ended up, I was there for 29 days. I had literally two shirts, one pair of pants and two pairs of underwear. Luckily the hotel they stuck me in was actually built into a mall. So I went to the mall and bought more clothes because it was getting tired of having to do laundry every night. I was like, forget it. I'll just buy new clothes. And I ended up being there. They're like, we don't know how long you're gonna be here now. And by day 29, I finally got to fly home. So, some of these things happening, you just don't know.
Absolutely. There definitely can be some uncertainties in the cybersecurity field and just tech in general. But you know, sometimes I think that's what keeps this job fun and interesting. Now, if people want to, you know, reach out to you or kind of getting to know more about you and Accolade and stuff like that, where can they find, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, the best place to find us is going to be the Accolade website, which is accolade.com. You can find that. I'm going to spell it out because it is spelled a little weird because it's a trademark name. It's A-K-Y-L-A-D-E. And it's pronounced Accolade, like you got an accolade because you did great things. That's yeah. why it was named that way. Basically, you know, congratulations, you're certified. And right now that's the company name. You can find us on all the social medias at Accolade Certified, A-K-Y-L-A-D-E Certified. On everything except for X, which is known as Twitter, because that's too long of a name for them, apparently. And I think we're Accolade or something else like that, or Accolade Tech or something. But all the other ones are just Accolade Certified. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me either support@accolade.com or jason@accolade.com. And our phone number and contact information is on the website. I look forward to seeing the first five of your audience getting certified. And anybody else who wants to get certified, you can always go over to accolade.com and learn more about the CCRF and CCRP, as well as the Mastering Cyber Resilience book. That book is available on Amazon if anybody wants to pick up a copy. It's available as a paperback and an ebook. If you are taking the class through an ATP, which is one of our authorized training partners, you actually get a copy of that textbook as an ebook as part of your enrollment in their training as well.
Awesome. Now, for those of you who are watching, if you're uncertain where you need to start in the cybersecurity field, if you have like no experience at all, I definitely recommend checking out this video on screen now where we dive deep into some of the things you can do to help leverage yourself and get yourself more prepared for a role in cybersecurity. I hope you guys enjoyed this video, and until next time, keep learning.